Hey, Dog Rewarders. Listen, the audio that you're going to hear coming up here is a little bit problematic. I'll be honest with you guys, I kind of screwed it up for a second time, but the interview is so good, we thought we'd better bring it to you anyway. You're going to hear the great Suzanne Clothier, and we made the decision to prioritize the quality of her voice. So if Verena and I sound like we are talking to you from the other side of an 8-bit modem, please forgive us. It is really Suzanne you want to be listening to.
We're talking about dogs. Talking about you and your dog. Struggling dogs. Talking about every kind of dog. Good dogs, bad dogs. Especially the sad dogs. Dog, 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 dog. Reward your dog.
Welcome to the Reward Your Dog podcast. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Verena.
We understand what it's like living with dogs who struggle.
And we are here to give you tools and ideas to help you and your dog live an awesome life.
Awesome.
Hello and welcome to this, the Reward Your Dog podcast, everyone.
Hey,
guys.
So, well, as you all heard, there is the voice of our guest, the lovely and talented Suzanne.
Well, we have a question, Suzanne.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of people that pronounce your name in weird ways. I've heard anything from Clothier to Clothier. So could you enlighten us what your name's actually pronounced like?
Just Clothier. Yeah, sometimes make it very artsy-fartsy, and they call me Clothier. Or they'll call and tell John that they're close friends of Susan Clothier, and he thinks, are you, really? So first your name's Suzanne, and secondly, it's Clothier. But other than that, are you really a close friend? No. So just Clothier, just the good old-fashioned English pronunciation.
Perfect. That's what I always thought. And then I've heard people say it in all kinds of ways, and I'm like, am I getting it wrong? I don't think so.
No, you've actually spent time with me, so I'm pretty sure you're accurate. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, so, Verena, why don't you set up our guest here?
Sure. I thought that reading out a bio is like the most boring thing you could possibly do, so I thought I wouldn't do that, right? Because who likes it? But yeah, we'll link Suzanne's website, and you can... you can look her up because she's amazing. I'm going to give you a few little facts, and then I'm going to talk to you about how I met Suzanne. Suzanne, rumors are that you've worked with animals professionally since 1977, which is impossible. You can't, that can't possibly be the case, but, you know, maybe you time traveled. Suzanne's approach to training is called relationship-centered training, within the context of relationship-centered training, she's published a variety of amazing resources like books, DVDs, online courses, training tools. Her book is called Bones Would Rain from the Sky, and it's awesome, and you should all go and buy it. And Suzanne is well known for the Treat and Retreat protocol, which we may talk about in this podcast sometime, something called Carrot, which is an assessment tool for dogs, and the Enriched Puppy protocol for raising puppies. I know, Suzanne, that you work closely with guide dog organizations, right? Is that a thing?
I have done that. Yeah, major guide dog organizations have brought me in as a consultant to help with their puppy raising program. So from birth to placement of the puppies, around 8 to 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then also some of the schools had me work with their puppy raising program. So once the raisers have them, what are we going to teach them till they come back in for mm-hmm. training? So I think that's the, you know, there's things that you do in life that don't get a whole lot of publicity, or, you know, I don't spend time marketing that or anything, but of the many things I've done with dogs, that's one of the things I'm proudest of is the, I think we're over 20,000 puppies now raised that way with my program as the backbone of what they do. And mm-hmm. it overhauled those programs in a massive way. Enough so now that they've taken it and put it into, you know, international working dog group stuff, mm-hmm. without crediting me, but that's life. I know yep. where it came from, but it's how I've raised my puppies. You know, I've been breeding German Shepherds for a very long time, 11 generations so far. Mm-hmm.
Right. And your kennel is called Hawks Hunt. And that is exactly how I know you, right? So most people are like, Suzanne Clothier, or she came out, she did the really real relaxation, or she did Treat and Retreat, right? So for me, no, I did not know who you were, even though I was, of course, using, you know, some of your protocols that were telephoned to me, like game of telephone, right? So now I'm like, oh, there's nuances I didn't catch. But anyway, different story. but I was looking for a German Shepherd. And I was talking to a friend who loves all the shepherds. She herself has a Belgian Shepherd. And she was helping me find a breeder. And one day she texted me a picture of your dog Lynx with puppies on the ground. And she was like, these are the German Shepherds you want. And I'm like, who's that? What is happening? And she's like, that's Suzanne Clothier, and you should reach out to her. And I was like, well, there's no information on Suzanne's website about puppies, but I guess I'll try the contact form. And 10 minutes later, you messaged me back, and the rest is history.
There so you go.
That's, yeah, that's how I got into
timing. Kind of, timing is everything.
Know you.
That's how you got into the world.
Yeah, so that's, can I have that? Thank you. Sorry, the puppy just brought me a delicious piece of, I don't know what. She's like, I would like you to trade that, please, for some kibble or something. I don't have anything except praise. What a wonderful dog you are. So, yeah, when I finally took down the questionnaire on my website, because everybody would say, oh, my bucket list, I'm going to have one of Suzanne's puppies. And I remember thinking, someone said that, oh, yeah, my friend's going to get one of your puppies. I was like, yeah, your friend should actually talk to me first. That would be a good starting point. And it just got to be, thanks for admiring my dogs and thanks for admiring, you know, and thinking you want one. But mostly just, no, at this point we have people that they're on their fourth dog from me. So we have enough repeat customers and no, I just had to. So yeah, timing's everything. So good for you for emailing me. There you go.
I know, I got really lucky. I feel like,
the puppy got really lucky too. Let's get clear about that. You're exactly the kind of home I want for my babies.
Yeah. Iggy's been a good addition to our household. She keeps us on our toes. All of you have heard about my lovely Iggy, of course. Yeah, she's just fantastic. So on this little show, we do what's called the animal check-in. Should we go there?
Sure. Let's animal check-in. Suzanne.
Yeah.
Everybody's heard about our dogs and our cat and our horse and we were wondering how your animals are doing today,
as we speak.
There's a go ahead.
there's a lot of them, so as of today, everyone's doing well, which is when you have this many, you know, it's like going to Vegas. The odds are against you. the farm always wins. Yes.
You got any bullet point animal events from the week? Anything like that?
I don't think so. Well, you know, highlight of the season would be the tortoises are really itching to get back out into the sunshine if we ever have any again. And the dandelions are growing. So it's always one of our joys is to bring them their first big bunches of, you know, dandelions and flowers. And if a tortoise's eyes can light up, it's when they see those yellow flowers. They're like, yes, that's what we're waiting for. But they're big tortoises. So they're not little. So we can't just put them out on the lawn for the afternoon if it's nice. They are big. So it's an endeavor. So we're like, hang tight. The warm weather's coming. And the horses, of course, are delighted that there's grass again, even though they have to wear grazing muzzles because one's a pony. I once counted 36 bites in a row without moving a single foot.
Mm-hmm.
She just went chomp, 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 chomp. I was like, I just started counting. So I'm like, how much grass can you fit in that little pony mouth? She's like, a lot. Turns out a study shows ponies can eat 30% more than a horse in the same amount of time. Like, literally, mouth for mouth, they eat more. So it's like, you will be wearing a grazing muzzle, too.
All right, well, I'm completely charmed by this whole tortoise tableau you've built for us.
Yeah, they're
especially like big. Itching to get out into the sun is a little hard to picture, but I'm here for it.
Well, and they're big, so now they're starting to like ram the walls of their indoor pen. Like they know the sun's out there and the dandelions are blooming, mm-hmm. and for all I know, they can smell them. But they are as wide as our bathtub. That's how big they are. So
wow,
yeah we're getting forces. Older. They're getting bigger. It's like,
Wow.
I remember from visiting your farm that there's also pigs, right? How are the piggies?
The pigs are very busy. They have taken it upon themselves to decide to turn over and rototill most of one of the pastures the cattle use, which doesn't seem to bother anybody. So they're up at the crack of dawn, out and about doing their thing, and then they come in and eat breakfast and they take a nap. So I actually don't think it's a bad life they have. So they're doing fine. They don't really have any job except do whatever you want, which is so it's a nice job. Get up when you want, eat when you want, go do
that'll
what
always
you
be
want.
The dream.
Yeah, that's Jesse's dream life right there. Mm-hmm. Maybe minus the tilling the fields, but
yeah, but it's fun. Yeah. Like they're just doing it because they enjoy it. No one's making them do it, so it's pretty entertaining. And then we should have a couple of new calves.
Self-actualized.
They're totally self-actualized, and the only concern they have is they might like get called late for dinner. They might miss the dinner call, and then they have to run really fast, which they can. They can run shockingly fast because they're really fit. Like they do miles every day. They're out with the cattle, so they're and then they sleep in a cushy little stall with the ponies. It's, rough life.
Oh man. Folks at home, what we haven't addressed yet is that we already did an entire interview with Suzanne, and I'll follow my sword here. I ruined the tech on the whole thing. It was a nightmare. It was unlistenable, although it was full of all sorts of gems, as I'm confident this one will be. So she has generously donated her time to come back and do this all again, which is very sweet of her. But I have to say it's completely worth it because, again, I didn't hear about these tortoises. I didn't hear about these pigs last time. So like a fine wine, this podcast is just getting better and better. Do we have
That's
any more animals we want to address before we
We haven't addressed Bluey the rooster and how he has calmed down because he was getting he was doing his job, like don't hassle my hens. And he's a big rooster.
See what I mean?
That's
here,
an
folks.
Understatement. He's a big Cochin, so his head's probably up there with my knee. He's a big boy. So when he gets annoyed, he's annoyed. But I kept saying he's only mad when you pressure his hens or make them run or he feels like you're going to corner them. So he's very watchful. So it's entertaining. So number one, you stop and you say, "Hello, sir. I see where you are. I see where your hens are." Absolutely. Politely go past, and he's like, "Watch that you do." But yeah, he's mellowed out now in his second spring, third spring. So yeah, as long as you nod and help. For a while last year, I went to the barn. I had to take something with me, like a peace offering for the giant rooster. Was gonna, because he's just gorgeous. And then we have Son of Bluey, who's like his dad does the serious lifting. He's just handsome. The girls are laying eggs like crazy, and so the pigs get eggs, the dogs get eggs, our friends get eggs, we get eggs. It's all good. I appreciate the work the girls do.
Nice.
Not a farm without chickens.
Do the cows have any babies?
There might be some coming. We're trying to shrink the herd. At one point we had 37.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
It is a lot. And at one point we thought about how many cows would we have to raise to feed our own dogs? And the answer was, I would have had to have a herd of 75 cows to keep all my dogs fed with homegrown beef. So we decided that was a bad idea.
The trade-off maybe doesn't quite.
Exactly, no. All we would do is just take care of cows so our dogs could eat. It's like, I don't know that that's the best plan.
I think it's okay to outsource some
and we live
food growing in life.
Yeah, we live in dairy country, so coming by used dairy cows is not hard. This is all farmland, so easy. And then we're hoping this summer to get the crazy cat, our axe murderer, psycho kitty, a way to go outside. safely.
He's like a catio or something like that?
Yeah, because otherwise he would just probably get himself killed by some bird who really annoyed. But yes, he has nightly massacres in the bathtub. So we would wake up and there'd be blood all over the bathtub. And we're like, why? It's kind of eerie. You don't know where it came from, but there's a fair amount of it. Turns out he catches things and then he puts them in the bathtub. It's just like his little torture
to play
table.
With.
Little serial killer.
Yeah. Like, oh, how did you find out that then when they're in the? I don't want to know. But I watched him do it one night in the middle of the night, and when he gets annoyed, I guess cats can resource guard, but he sounds like a Tibetan throat singer. So I was like,
I've heard that sound from a cat. Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean.
In the dark, where you're not sure where the sound's coming from, it's a little alarming. Then you look, and he's like psycho killer cat with a rat in his mouth, and he's like, touch it and die. I'm like, oh, no, it's yours. Can I get my camera and videotape that? Because it's a really cool sound. And it echoes, like, you know, singing in the shower. It works for the cat, too. So he's a masterful throat singer when his mouth is full of mouse or rat. So all fun. It's always fun.
Yesterday we were at the, this is a, I promise this relates. Yesterday we were at the beach with Iggy and my other dog, and Ozzy, and we were throwing sticks for Iggy. And she would swim back with a stick in her mouth, like breathing hard, and go like... Mm-hmm. Like swallowing the whole river. It was funny. Yep. It's very funny.
It. Yep.
Wow. These are some vivid tableaus that have been painted.
Oh, yeah.
I've used that word twice. Let's go with vignette. Anyway, I want to refocus up on dogs here and get to our topic. The folks at home want to know about relationship building with dogs, right? Is that what we're going to talk about?
That's it, yeah. The topic or the name of the episode is Relationship is Everything.
Uh-huh.
Which is a bit of a simplification, oversimplification, but it's not really, right? The name of your company is, or training approach is relationship-centered training. Suzanne, do you want to tell us a little bit about why you consider relationship to be so central, in the relationship?
So for me, that's the overarching umbrella that covers everything. And it hasn't always been that way. So I had relationships mm-hmm. with animals, horses, dogs, like whatever pets I had at the time, cats. So I had those and I really enjoyed the relationships. And those relationships were more like conversations and shared activities and stuff we did. And often me hanging out with the animal asking like, so what floats your boat? What amuses you? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you like? What can we do together? And that included like my pet stag beetle Benji, you know, who I carried around in a coffee can one fine summer and horrified all the condescending adults who were like, well, what have you gotten there, honey? I was like, oh, you want to see? Because I thought he was gorgeous. And I'd open the coffee can lid, then they'd wet themselves. I'm like, you know, you asked, like, idiots. So even that little beetle, I wasn't trying to make him do something, but then it became obvious like I could teach a dog tricks, so that was cool, and did that and taught the mouse stuff and taught the rabbit to retrieve. Like that conversation started to slide into stuff, and then I found out about competitions, and so at one point it was back in the 70s, right? So macrame was big. And that was one of our art projects, that you could macrame anything you wanted. So most people did something like a plant hanger for their mom or, you know, some owl mm-hmm. thing you could hang on the wall. I was like, anything. And they're like, yeah, anything. I was like, okay. So I did a halter for a horse. And at that point, halter tops were very popular. So this mm-hmm. absolutely freaked out the art teacher. Because she looked at a halter for a horse and she thought I was planning to wear that, you know, to barely cover my boobs. She was like really upset about this project. And I was like, what is wrong with you? You said I could do anything. She's like, that is not acceptable. I was like, I just adults,
inappropriate,
man.
Inappropriate, Suzanne.
Swear to God, adults drove me crazy until I was one. And now they still drive me crazy. But yeah, I was like, a halter for a horse. She's like, oh, the relief on her face. I can still see it. It's pretty funny. But then the next thing I macrameed was a harness for the collie I had available to me. It was the neighbor's collie. And I had taught him to drive. So I taught him to drive pulling this electric car whose battery was long since gone and no one had any use for it. But I'm like, oh, I can do that. So I taught this collie to drive. I drove him all over town, but I macrame'd him the harness to do it with. So that was pretty cool. And we won the dog show for best tricks because he could go through, you know, fake flaming hoops, and he could drive. He knew all kinds of stuff. And so it was just a hoot. No one told me what you could or couldn't do. So, like, together we're like, I don't know, can you do this? He's like, sure. So we actually went in with it as a chariot. And so I was standing up in the cart and drove him into the competition ring. So, but the more I got into formal training, like, this is what they must learn.
Yeah.
Instead of just having fun. The weirder it got, because it got further away from what I had with them when I wasn't teaching anything specific, but I was just being with them or trying to help them. Like one little really spooky horse, if you walk behind him, he'd almost jump in his water bucket. He was so afraid. Mm. And I just took him on as a pet project. No one asked me to. It was a sales barn, and he was just a little hack horse. But by the end of that summer, he would follow me around anywhere with no lead. I could ride him out on the trails. I knew which songs he liked. I knew he trusted me so much. At one point, a fire engine went by screaming maybe 50 feet with just a little barrier of trees between me and him on the trail on the road. And I thought, this is how I'm going to die. And he picked up his head and his ears were swiveling. And I'm like, I gotcha. We're good. I didn't panic. And I just sang his favorite song, which is I Can See Clearly Now. He really liked that song.
Oh, nice.
I know. Mm-hmm. I thought that was...
Good choice. Good choice,
little horse. As I got older, I'm like, good choice, horse. And he just dropped his head. And he's like, okay, we're good. We're good. I'm like, yep. But then I'd get into formal training, and I found myself in arguments with animals. And I'm like, I don't like this part. I'm angry with you, or I'm disappointed with you, or I have to correct you, or it's like... What the hell? So I didn't like, it's like there's something not right here. I can go for a ride with one horse, two horses loose, and a donkey, and 10 dogs. And that works beautifully. But if I try to teach you something formal, it loses all the connection and the magic and the respect and the joy. And I thought something's not right here. So that just helped me on my quest.
That brings really true. Sorry to jump on you there. Zoom is a little awkward that way. but I, like, it almost seems sometimes like my dogs know what I want, and we have a relationship and when we're out and about. One of my dogs loves to roam, but he always keeps an eye on me, and I can get him if I have to. He understands when it's time to really come back, and I'm not joking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, yep, for sure, I'm going to do this. I wouldn't call this a beautifully trained, you know, like, formal recall. But he knows when he needs to keep track of me and stay with me. But when I do something that smacks too much of actual, like, formal training, and I'm using my clicker, he's, like, a little suspicious. He's like, this is too mechanical for me. And with Iggy, I'm getting into dog sports now, and I'm really slow to do the training. Because I'm like, this is very, like, transactional in some way.
Exactly. That's what it becomes. It stops being a conversation, and it becomes so, do this and I'll do that, or do this or I will do that, right? In the old corrective training, if you don't do that, I will, whatever, fill in the blank, whatever corrections you use. And it could just be like, you know, you need to do this. Or it could be an actual physical correction, which weirdly... is how I became a professional. I mean, first I'm bent badly in an animal shape. But I could deliver corrections dispassionately and effectively and well, so the animals still liked me and trusted me and understood what I was after. So that's the weird part. I'm so good at delivering corrections that do this or that. The animals got it. But I still didn't like it. So, and I'm still not a big fan of transactional training. And it's easy to get carried away, right? Because if you shift to the all positive, like I was around when Karen Pryor, you know, came on the scene and made some big changes, and Dunbar came on the scene and made some big changes. I remember all that. And I remember, oh, this is so exciting. You can use a clicker to do this, this, and this. And in the back of my head was still this notion that we're just have a new form of transactional again.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, and we're
let's dive into that a little bit. Yeah. So there's a little bit of a distinction that we're making right now between kind of having a transactional relationship, or not even relationship, but having transactions versus having relationship. What would that look like in practical terms, so that our dog guardians can kind of, you know, relate that to how they are with their own dogs?
I think, and I don't, you know, for any nth degree, do I think that dogs are people, or people are like dogs, or, you know, whoever it was that said, if, you know, we could talk to, if a lion could talk, we wouldn't understand him anyway. They have their own perception of the world. Now it's going to drive me crazy who said that. Look it up, Jess. The lion.
All right, I'm on it.
Thank you. If a lion could talk, we wouldn't understand him anyway. So I can always tell if I'm going to move into transactional, because it's like if I say to my husband, like, hey, when you're out later, would you pick up some ketchup, you know, while you're off getting the horse's medication from the vet? And he's like, sure. I don't say, like, if you do this, then I will do this for you, right? As soon as I get into that equation, can you do this with me is one conversation. I need you to do this thing which is not on your radar, which is not in your game plan, which is not a great joy to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like, and I almost always have treats, or I've got some kind of reward. If I say to the, you know, I've got three dogs laying here snoozing, and interestingly, River thought, well, if you're just sitting there, how about I bring you some stuff, because that's always fun. She loves to find little tiny things that sometimes are so small they stick to her tongue, so she has to work at actually getting it on her lips to give it to me. Mm-hmm. She's like, look what I found for you. I was like, that is brilliant. And she's happy to just have me say, that's great, but she's hopeful that maybe I'll also have some cookies. That would be fine. But I don't have a lot of cookies around me. But if I say, hey, girls, let's go, you know, please go outside, or I need you to come here, can you all, like right now, just lay down, be quiet. There's no food involved. There's no transaction.
Mm-hmm.
It would be no different than telling John, I'm on a podcast, so, you know, just don't come in this room for a while till I come back out. It's the end. So there's a quality of, this is how this moment's going to go, and this is how we're going to share it, or not, if I say, please go outside.
Yeah, this is actually such a really good point. I often see that, especially puppy parents, they carry their treat pouch everywhere, and then they create that aura of excitement around them, too. So suddenly we have a dog that's not used to, I sometimes call it like benign ignoring.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Every once in a while, a dog needs to know that I'm around, but I'm not going to actually interact with them closely, and I'm not going to give them cookies every 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a big fan of making everything about an exchange for cookies, especially with puppies, for that reason, because it just creates that kind of like constant being on and needing to like perform from everybody, both the guardian and the dog.
Well, imagine if, you know, every time, you know, Jesse walked into the room, he's like, hey, you know, can you do this for me? Here's $5. You know, it's like, what?
Yeah, they have a word for those people, and they're bosses.
And bosses aren't really good at reinforcement, usually.
And they're not historically well-liked.
No, exactly. So that we can, yeah, it's like, why are we setting up this dynamic? And I always think, and we're meaning to be kind, and I'm so glad that, you know, food rewards and positive reinforcement is a huge part of dog training in many circles these days. It's great. But it can also become pressure. It can also
absolutely
lead to the impossible, you know, the indecent proposal, like the movie where you know, Redford's character says, will you sleep with me? And she's like, no, I'm a happily married woman. He goes, how about for $1 million? And she's like, well, I got to think about that now. It's like, now we have the indecent proposal. The money becomes pressure to do something that her first instincts were, I don't want to. No, thank you. And it causes all kinds of chaos. And I see that with dogs. So I don't get dressed with food. I don't even, I guess I own a food treat pouch, but where the hell it is, I don't know. Yeah, I'm very careful. If I'm deliberately training a behavior, then I will have food rewards often on me in my pocket, or I've come to believe everything should have pockets and a kangaroo pouch. That's how all clothing should be designed that way, for sure.
Please listen, everyone. Exactly. We need pockets.
Fashion designers, pockets in every... I tried to get a wedding dress that had pockets, and they looked at me like I was insane. Nowadays, apparently, they make them, but not when I married John. Because I was going to
ride. A pioneer, yes.
Oh, yeah, as always, ahead of my time, which just means you're gonna bump your ass on unproven roads and have a lot of splinters and be lost a lot. So just so you know, that's what being a pioneer means. And you're not paid, because people are like, who knows why she's doing that? That's crazy. But
As the designated agent of chaos, I'm going to push in here, Verena, and
do it.
I'm very disappointed in you. Do you know if that lion could speak comment came from?
No.
Wittgenstein.
No. Oh, that's right. Of course. I majored in philosophy, and Wittgenstein was one of my special interests. So Jesse is right to give me a hard time about that one. Wittgenstein is a very sad and haunted person. Interesting guy. Anyway, this is a dark podcast. Barely, but kind of, right?
Yeah, but it's not Austrian dark.
It's a dog, not dark, babe.
Okay, well.
That's pretty funny.
Anyway, I feel like this is a pretty lighthearted podcast.
It's a pretty lighthearted podcast.
It is.
All right.
Austrians can be a little joyless, I'm just saying.
Oh, and you know what? They have a delightful accent, though. So let's talk a little bit about
all the Austrians click off, that's it. We're not listening to this podcast anymore.
So far, we haven't had any listeners from Austria, but we invite them.
Stut mir leid, Austria.
So what are some things that people sometimes do that... Let's go with the negative first. What are some things that people might do to actually hurt the relationship to their dogs, or to prevent a relationship from forming properly? What are some things that people maybe shouldn't do?
So one would try to be used bribery, right? So I think dogs are very sensitive to our intent. They're very sensitive to our intent. I was just working with a dog who, as far as we can tell, had been really badly corrected for getting out of a crate. So he was frantic about getting in a crate. But when you went to say, hey, buddy, it's okay, you can come out. And he's like, nope. And this is a rescue dog, so we're guessing, because we can only tell by his behavior what's upsetting to him or not. So it's like, well, we've got some cookies. And that just became a worse torture. He curled up even further. So sometimes meaning to be helpful and thinking it will make things better, we actually bribe them. And we can bribe them come here, look, I've got a cookie. And we're actually using it as a trap, that we mean to grab your collar as soon as you get within reach. And so dogs become really good at reading our body language. And then, as trainers would say, we poison that. So they're oh, no, cookies come with strings and you're not to be trusted. So that one, I hate using that. I will rather just flat out say, I'm really sorry, this has to happen. My dogs know non-negotiable. And I'm just I understand you don't want to do this, but this one's non-negotiable. This has to happen. I have to leave the house and get it on an airplane. So if you don't want to come in, we're not having that chat. I have to go get on that plane.
Yeah, I think being really honest about when choice is on the table and when it's not on the table is one of the kindest things you can do. Mm-hmm. Why would you cajole your dog into the car that makes them nauseous with food? Just lift them up and put them in if they have to go to the vet.
It's like, I'm really sorry. This has to happen.
Yep.
And so that whole concept, and it's one of the things that drives me crazy about the positive trainers is I say it's the chicken and cheese solution. Just get more chicken, just get more cheese. It's like, not that would be like saying, oh, your kid doesn't like this, he gets car sick, he doesn't want to get in the car. Well, you know what, just get him some more money, promise him some more toys. It's like, there are parents who would do that, of course, but we would think, what? Or if Jessie's like, I know she doesn't like heights, but I really want to go up that mountain trail, so I'm just gonna make sure she has another horse. And Varin is like, wait, what? I would agree to that.
that might actually work.
Exactly.
But, just kidding.
Yeah, just kidding. He's not but crazy enough to do that. Mm-hmm.
I was just hanging out with somebody who has pretty severe fear of heights. And for him, you know, promising him another guitar would have probably been more enticing. But that wouldn't have worked. He would just like, I think I'm going to die. And that's not helpful. So that would have eroded the trust if I had kind of bullied him. Or even if I just tried to, you know, some dogs, we have two different dogs, Iggy's. Both of my dogs are very biddable dogs, actually. But Ozzy is the kind of dog, you kind of look at him and can physically move him because his, like, sense of space is mm-hmm. very, he's, like, very, like, oh, excuse me, I'm stepping to the right. I know you want through. I could physically very easily bully this dog mm-hmm. by just moving my body in ways to like, make him do things. And if I then bring food into this, it all becomes very, very coercive. And he just wants to sit in a corner and cower. So yeah, that all like is very true.
Too much pressure. And I really didn't want to do that. And now I'm upsetting you and I don't want to upset you. It just becomes a mess. And I think also like your friend with the heights issue, had you tried to shame him out of it or jolly him out of it? That's the other technique that makes me crazy. It's like, it's okay. It's nice and high. We like mountains. It's so fun. Look over the edge. It's like, what the hell? If I'm him, I'm backing away from you because apparently you're insane. And I will be on my belly crawling down the trail back to the parking lot. But we do that with dogs as if we act okay. Everything's fine. It's like, you cannot discount someone else's feelings or fears. You can't gaslight your dog. Seriously. He says, I'm afraid of this. Believe him. It's like, how can I help you is a different question than how will I make you feel okay? It's like,
because the implication is like, you are, your feelings don't matter in this situation. I don't have any respect for your instincts or, you know, what you believe. And of course, that's going to hurt your relationship, right?
Yeah, the dog learns.
If he's like, hey, look out, you know, there's that guy across the street.
Don't be silly.
You're like,
Yeah. Or even when they bark out the window in the middle of the night, most people very irritably are like, there's nothing out there. And the dog thinks, nothing you can smell or see, dumbass. Like, you know. They learn quickly that we can't smell anything by their standards. Also, we apparently are deaf. They're like, you didn't hear that squirrel like 3 acres over that farted and, you know, like, no. So I always
I'm just looking out for you, folks.
Exactly. It's like, you know, I just thought you should know. So I sit up and I'm like, so I pay attention like I'm listening. I'm like, all right, I think it's okay. Because obviously if I do hear something, I'm like, oh, hell, thanks for letting me know, guys. But, yeah, sometimes it's like there's a cat walking up the driveway. It's like, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that at 3 a.m. Just not really at all. But, sometimes you're like, hey, there's a cow standing on the lawn. Just thought you should know. It's like, thanks for the input. Yes, I hear him. Are we going to get up and get to that cow at 3 a.m.? No, he'll be fine. He can wait till morning comes. He'll be all right. We live far enough away.
Fortunately, in the city, that doesn't happen that much. But, no. sounds like
a friend who, you know, her dogs went off like crazy. And she did not live, you know, in rural America like I do. And so her dogs lost their shit and she was just pissed off and tired. And she's like, shut the hell up. And in the morning, she discovered that her veterinarian's van had been stolen. The dogs were told you. It was stolen from the driveway underneath her bedroom window where her dogs were losing their minds. And she just yelled at them and told them to knock it off. And they tried multiple times. And then, of course, they stopped because the people in the van left. So,
It worked. They got them away.
Never discount what your animals tell you, even if you don't quite understand it. So I have a technique. And this is not like Monty Roberts, for the love of God, or natural horsemanship stuff. And I just say, go join them. This is not joining up. So don't make that confusion, please. But this is go join them in what they're doing. So,
yes.
You know, they're sniffing 100%. Something or they're listening to something. And so I will go do it too, which is what I would do with any friend. If I see John like staring up at a tree, I don't be like, what are you doing? That's stupid. Don't be ridiculous. There's nothing in that tree. I would assume John has good instincts. And if he's standing there staring into a tree, there's something worth looking at. or are watching or listening to. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, what you looking at? What do you see?
With my horse, she is very... She really cares about things at a distance. Mm-hmm. I sometimes wonder about her eyesight. If like she just has very keen eyesight far away, or maybe not. Maybe they're all shapes, right? I don't know. It's an interesting question. But we're doing our little training, we're doing our shoulder ins or whatever, haunches in, and she stops and watches, I just look over there. Sometimes I can figure out what she's looking at. Sometimes I can't. But I'm like, clearly we need to stop and deal with that, because if I just glossed over it and gave her more cookies, that wouldn't sit well with her. I don't think that would make her...
No, and the same thing, if you corrected her, right? If you tapped her with a whip or you gave her the spurs, like, we are working on this. You may not stop and look at that thing. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. If the animal says, this is on my radar and mm-hmm. this is important enough to snag my attention... Then I do them the honor of saying, what is it? I had the pony out for a walk, and there was a bear in the neighborhood that we knew. And all of a sudden, she stops, and the head came up, and those nostrils are flaring. And she's really staring into the woods. But it was like around sunset, so I really couldn't see that well. Horses see much better in the dark than we do. So I thought, I'll take your word for it. I looked in the same direction and paid very close attention, too. And then at some point, I was like, are we good? Can we go on? She's like, not yet. Okay, now we can walk. I was like, all right. But if I don't, then I teach the animal I'm not really paying attention. And that, I think it's a careless thing to tell anyone, like, whatever you say doesn't matter to me. That's a terrible concept in a relationship. But also, they start to wonder, like, if you were dropped on your head as a child, possibly.
Well, and especially when it's evident that they are the expert exactly. in this situation, right? Like, it, you know, from their perspective, we are obviously just about blind and deaf. And why would we not want to know the thing that they know?
Right. So I think if I'm going to tell an animal, like, I recognize that that's worrisome to you, but come with me. And I will get us to safety, or I will help us through this. The reason I think my animals, all of them, trust me to such a degree is that I do honor what they tell me. I listen to what they tell me, even if I don't share that same opinion or reaction. I mean, when the donkey looks at a plastic bag, you know, or feed bag blowing, and she's like, I possibly think we're going to die. I'm like, I think we can handle it, and I've got it. And she's like, all right, but you go touch that, because it looks like a dragon to me. But they believe me when I say, I hear you, and I know you're worried about this. Come with me. I've got this. Or stay here with me. I'm aware of what scares you, and I will run interference. So I think it's the best way to build trust. If you want to undermine the trust, ignore what they tell you. Even if you don't understand it, appreciate their perspective and know that it has value for them.
So Suzanne, I think you have something called the elemental questions to help guardians kind of decide how to... It's kind of the way I see it, it's kind of a framework mm-hmm. to help people kind of sort out this relationship business in kind of a structured way, which I think is really, really helpful. And you don't have to do them all, but I think there are some really heavy hitters, and maybe we can talk about a couple of them. The one that always sticks with me is, how is this for you?
Exactly.
So that's not the first one, I know that.
Yeah.
So, do you want to talk a little bit about your elemental questions? I think that's so important.
Right. So just remember that relationship-centered training means that the relationship stays at the center of everything I do. So anything I do with or for an animal, my very first question is, how will this affect the relationship with the animal? Is this going to mm-hmm. support it, undermine it, or have no big effect on it? So I realized that I only have 6 basic questions that I ask animals. I think I was an alchemist in a previous life, because I like boiling things down to elements and then putting things together in new ways. So there's 6 of them, and it's easy to...
6 is a meaningful number, too, so in terms of, you know...
Every number is meaningful, right? Every number has some proportions. Everything's magical, and it all means something, or it all means nothing. That's my rule of thumb. So we have 6 of them. Hello, are you interested in social interactions? Like, you know, uh-huh. would you be interested in a chat? And who are you? How do you process the world? How does the world affect you? Are you, you know, if I was a person, I'm like, so, you know, what do? Thinking that might give me a clue, you know, about how they spend their time. But, you know, what are your favorite hobbies? There's many ways to ask the question. How is this for you is an immediate question, meaning right this second, dog.
Yeah.
Right this second, how is this for you? And it's, I think of it as like we're being like somewhat over the top hostesses. Are you warm enough? Are you cold enough? Can I get you something to drink? Would you like something more to eat? Would you like us to leave you alone? Would you like to be with us? Would you like to watch a movie? Would you like to be quiet? Would you like to go to the beach? Would you like to go to the mountains? How is this for you? Are you, so when the animal says like, I'm not great. It's like, okay, why? And that who are you might say like, ah, yeah, I know you're really sensitive to noises. So now I've put you in a situation. Or your friend with the fear of heights. You know, if you'd ask him, how is this for you? And he's like, not great. You know, you and Jess are like, oh, I love this mountain view. And this is our favorite trail. And he's like, I just think I'm going to die. How's this for you? It's like, what would make it better? Going down the trail back to the parking lot. So how is this?
It was actually, to interject real quick, when it was about a waterfall trail, and he was like, I think I'd rather stay here and watch it from here. And I was, you know, in the past me, prior to working in dog training and also doing this webinar, which you do on the elemental questions, I probably would have said, hey, it's so pretty. Let's just try it. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to go. I'll take a picture for you. I'll send it to you so you can see it real time with me. And then I'll come back up. See you in 10 minutes.
Yeah. How is this for you? Not cool. And if you push me further, it's going to get worse. Right. So that's the joy of that question is it's in the moment. So if I'm about to do anything with the dog, it's like, how is it for you? It's like overwhelming. Or, yeah, I hear what Jas, but that is much more exciting over there. That squirrel really has quite a tail. So it could go any which way. Or, yeah, you know what? If we have to do it with a cookie. Yeah, that makes it better. How is this for you? Oh, that's better. It could be any which way. And then the other three are, can you? Are you physically, mentally, emotionally capable of this thing I'm asking you to do?
Yeah.
May I, which is about permission. May I direct, control, inhibit your behavior? Can I do things to your body? And then the final one is, can we, with your preferences and needs and limits and my preferences and needs and limits, what are we together capable of doing? And it all goes round and round.
That has so many implications for all the things, right? It's like, I would like to do just off the wall. Maybe I want to do agility with my dog, right? But my dog has an injury in their hock. Yep. That would be like, can you? No, actually, I can't. Or my dog finds crowds difficult, loves the agility, everything's great. But if we go into a trial environment, can we trial? No, we probably cannot trial, right? So yeah, this is really important.
Yep. And then, you know, the more we care about the relationship and the animal or the being we're in relationship with, the deeper we dive into all those questions. You know, it's like, oh, you're a calm dog. That's a very superficial assessment. And it's like, okay, you're not actually calm. You're actually beginning to shut down and get worried. How is this for you? Not good. My movement just slowed down. My breathing's got shallow. I'm starting to compress into myself. Not good for you. So the more we want to know about the answers to those questions, the deeper we have to dive. And learning how to ask those questions and really hear the answers, that's the art of relationship. You know, you and Jess have been together long enough that he could probably just change the expression of his eyes ever so slightly. And you're like, wow, that really irritated him. But someone else having dinner with you would miss it completely. You know, they just they just said something, you know, kind of flippantly. And you just saw him. He is really subtle. It's like he did not think that was funny. And yeah, he just decided maybe I don't like that person quite so much. So that's how relationships should be. And I hate the word should. It's how they can be if we're paying attention and we're willing to invest in it. And it does take an investment and it takes time and time without goals. Like, you know, it's time just watching them be who they are. How does that work for you?
this kind of relates back to that transactional piece. If you're always in a transaction, being with your animal and observing them is really difficult. Like right now, I don't have as much time for my horse as I want to, which is sad. But that means that every time I go out, I then am like, I want to do the fun training, but it doesn't allow me to hang out and observe her in a pasture or give her a little rub or, mm-hmm. you know, just walk around with her and see the world from her eyes. And it's actually also not making our training better.
No, because the relationship is what actually brings it all together. It's, you know, the stuff we teach them in my seminars, I'll talk about, you know, little Timmy. And I'll say Timmy is the president of his math club, and he speaks French and German and English. And he's also on the fencing team. And he's also, for his age, considered one of the top chess players. And also he plays violin. And they're like, wow. I'm like, I know, pretty impressive for a 14-year-old, huh? So what does that tell you about his relationship with his parents and siblings? And there's just silence. Mm. It's like nothing. It teaches you nothing. It just tells you what stuff he knows. So I'm very careful to disconnect the relationship from stuff. And the older I get, the less formal stuff my animals know and the better my relationships are. And it's not because I didn't teach them stuff. I'm just no longer interested in teaching stuff. I'm amused by, you know, River likes to learn stuff. So we got two little silly trick titles. And to be fair, she earned both of them by learning half of the new behaviors in that class that night. Like, she just learns really fast. And she's like, well, that's ridiculous. I'm like, I know. Do you like doing that? She's like, yes, that amuses me. I'm like, okay, we have another trick you can test this on. And literally, she's like, got it.
This does not surprise me at all, knowing my dog.
And so, you know, like all the formal stuff I've taught in the past, and I'm much more amused by her bringing me a scrap of paper that she found on the floor. I'm like, wow. So if I ever get really feeble, she's going to be an awesome support dog. What I have her retrieve, one of her tricks is to pick up a credit card. I'm like, that could come in handy.
That could come in very handy. Know.
But, you know, back in the old days, my first shepherd, we had a phenomenal relationship, which I screwed up by lots of transactional stuff. But I remember sitting cross-legged in a chair and I was painting. I did a lot of animal artwork back then. And the photo I was working on slipped out of my hand. And I was like, ugh, by the time I put down all my paints and uncrossed my legs and take the blend, it's like, hey, Bear, could you get that for me? He's like, what? I was like, that? And I'm like pointing with my nose and my eyes like that. He's like, this? The photograph. I'm like, yes. He's like, sure. It was never taught as a formal thing. It was a request from someone who understood what I meant, right?
Mm-hmm. You have to know yourself or each other really well to be able to do that. And that is that time piece, right?
Yep.
Spending time spending time not just like mindlessly, it's spending time observing each other and knowing each other.
And watching how they do stuff. Like sometimes I just watch, sometimes I just sit and watch. And I just watch dogs be dogs. It's like, are you training? It's like, I had a great horse vet who was like that. He would arrive and he'd chit-chat with you. And everyone's like, he just talks so much. Like, he's actually just keeping you occupied while he watches the horse for quite a while. And then by time, he's like, all right, let's get him out of the stall now. And he almost always had already started to figure out what was going on. But I remember someone saying, like, I like him, but all he does is talk when he gets there. I'm like, you do know what he's doing, right? He's observing. And that is key to being a great veterinarian. It's key to anything. I mean, I think it's key to life. I really do. And
I think so, too.
Yeah, looking and
it
seeing.
Reminds me of interrupt you there. It reminds me of watching you in your treat and retreat classes in the videos. Mm. I did the treat and retreat certification. But you will be chit-chatting about something that doesn't seem to relate, because you're working with the dog and you're also keeping the guardian occupied because you know the guardian needs that in that moment, right? You have the relationship to the guardian where you're like, okay, you're nervous. You need somebody to make a silly joke and take your mind off things. Or I need to have the room be a little louder to get the dog used to that, to get the dog used to people doing this kind of stuff. And then sometimes you're like, okay, now we really have to just focus on the dog. So you know, it's deliberate. It's very deliberate on your part. And I always admired that. I think it's very cool.
Yeah, it's a learned skill. It's also, I was just working, where was I? Utah. I'm trying to remember anymore. Now we're back to traveling, clearly, because I don't know what state I'm in. But and it was really interesting because I was listening to the woman describing what was going on with the dog. But I'm also watching the dog and I'm thinking this is not lining up, like what she says and what the dog's mm-hmm. doing. They're not actually the same. And I was just throwing treats, and it looks like I'm just like, yeah, I'm just throwing cookies to make the dog feel better. And I'm not. I'm actually asking questions like, can you actually turn your head that far? Can you actually raise your head higher? Can you actually catch? I was like, oh, we actually have a physical problem that's driving this. So the dog actually was pretty stuck through her neck and had limited mm-hmm. range of motion. It's like, so what happens if I ask you to sit? It's like, yep, that does happen. So all of this is happening while it looks like I'm just throwing treats to the dog and smiling at her. It's like, nope, I'm calculating in my head. Wow, missed that treat, could not stretch her head that far, had to get up to get it, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So observation for me is deliberate, and I consider it a sacred act of love if you really mm-hmm. love something enough to watch it and watch it without a goal. Watch it with that open-ended, show me what I'm seeing. And it's not just looking. I looked at that. It's like, no. Really see it. Really, really see it. Mm-hmm. And that, you have to let go of your goals, your preconceived notions. And then, of course, the better your skills are, that you know what to look for. You know, when we as trainers, when we tell people, like, watch your dog, it's like, well, watch him do what? So you have to get specific. Watch for when that right ear comes back. Mm-hmm. And his movement changes. It slows just a little bit. So the rhythm and the cadence of da-dum, 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 da-dum becomes da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. It's like right there. Right there. That's when something changed in the dog's head. Mm-hmm. Hear the song of his movement. Hear the rhythm of his barks. You know, blah, 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 blah is not the same as boo. Not at all. So if we just say they're barking, then we've got a big lump category. But if we hear boo, 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 it's like, okay, starting to calm down. The arousal's starting to break up. Mm-hmm. Details matter.
Yeah, with my little dog, Ozzy, his tail bends over like a husky. Mm-hmm. And then the tip of the tail wiggles in certain ways. And that's how I keep track of mm-hmm. how he's feeling. If it starts wiggling differently or the tail descends, I'm like, oh, yep, okay, cadence is changing. Hind end is tensing up where we're in trouble here, or we're seeing prey, right? So I very much, very much understand that, because he likes to be out ahead, so I have to look at his butt. It's very cute. But
that is exactly the point I will tell trainers, because sometimes, you know, the trainers have a different perspective than the handler does. So someone who's across the room can say, like, I can't believe you didn't see that. It's like, mm-hmm. well, I don't have your perspective. I'm right here. What am I going to see from my perspective? So mm-hmm. I always tell trainers, get into the handler's perspective. What are they going to see? What is the change in the head, the neck? They're not seeing the tail as a rule, unless, like in your case, the dog's ahead of you. You're not going to see his head and his neck. You're going to see that butt and the tail change. It's like, well, there you go. That's an important viewpoint. So I used to practice laying in the hay field and throwing balls for the dogs, and they would come back. And John came out one day, and what I was practicing was, could I tell which dog it was by the rhythm of their footfalls and their breathing? And there was, I think, 10 of them at that point. So John came out, and he's like, now what are we doing? I'm like, training. I'm teaching myself. He's like, so laying on your back on a sunny day in a hayfield, playing balls, your dogs, that's working. I'm like, yeah, because I'm going to tell you which dog it is based on their footfalls and their breathing.
And it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it.
I believe so. You know, it's like when I'm laying down covered in puppies, it's like somebody has to do this because it's really important for the babies.
I've got one last question, if you would indulge us. I know you've indulged us a lot. I have two very, very different dogs. One is a dog that you raised using the Enrich Puppy Protocol, and then I have used many of your strategies and, you know, skills to train her, and, you know, she's wonderful. And for her, a relationship comes very easy. Like, she sometimes has to, like, seek it out. She's like, okay, you haven't paid enough attention to me. Now it's time for me, right? She really demands it. And then I have one dog who, if I didn't pay attention to him, he would just kind of sit in his corner in the room a lot of the time. Do you feel like there are factors that make a dog want to have a relationship with their person more easily? Or are there things that we can do to help those shyer dogs maybe? Kind of, you know, not every dog is a dog that's been raised in this trusting relationship from birth. But some dogs come from, you know, the cattle ranch in Texas, like my Aussie, or they come from a hoarding situation or something like that, right? So there's a lot of listeners that I think have dogs that had a really rough start. And I want to talk about those dogs for a little moment.
So that is a very complicated question, but it's an outstanding one. No, it's fine, because it's something I think about and work on actively all the time. So I actually have an answer for you from my perspective.
One, yes, I love it.
Is number one, first and foremost, the reason dogs live with us and can live with us and not lose their minds is they are social creatures. So they hardwired into them is the need and the desire for social interactions. Now, that doesn't mean they want to live in a ginormous family and, you know, go down to Central Park every day and you know, join the parades. Just like us, we are social animals as well, and we might be satisfied with just one or two meaningful relationships, and we have no desire to have a giant address book. And then there's people that are like, I've got friends all over the world. It's like, all right, yay for you. It's good. You know, their idea of heaven is having lots of people over for dinner every weekend. That would not suit me. So we have that built-in bias that the nature of the dog is a social creature meant to live in social organizations. And Fuller and Scott, way back in the early 70s, even wrote a really great line talking about this. And as I said, even if you're assessing a dog in the you know, all by himself, what you're assessing is a social animal in the absence of relationship. So, number one, their brain wants connection. Number two, they appear with a genetic template. So when we selectively breed dogs, like we breed for cattle dogs on the ranch, let's just say working cattle dogs, the selection would probably not be for a clingy lap dog, but for a dog
Absolutely.
Who wants to go out, do his job, and then may or may not want hugs and cuddles. Thinking of one border collie trainer I worked with briefly, and her dogs, at the end of they liked working with her, but at the end of the day, she's like, all right, I'm going in the house. They're like, see ya, you know, let us know if you need us again. They were perfectly happy hanging out in the barn. They did not feel bereft. Whereas if I took one of my shepherds and said, here, you know, go work the sheep and now stay in the barn without me, it would be piteous, pathetic, and they would dissemble the barn to get back because I've genetically selected for really sociable dogs who are like, I'm with you, you know, where are we going? They've got the we gene in a big way.
So I can attest to that.
Yeah, we can really relate to that dichotomy in our house. Actually.
And it's a big thing, you know, if you want a dog who's like, yeah, what are we doing? There's some people who don't. They want dogs that are like, you know, have a nice day at work. See you when you get home. And the dogs are not distressed by the absence of the human. And there's horses like that, too. There are ones that are like, oh, okay, you know, put silly braids in my hair and groom me all day and take me for walks and teach me silly tricks and all that stuff. And my pony's like, what is it we're doing? Is there going to be some work? Also, will there be some food? And then past that, she's like, is this huggy, kissy stuff? Like, what? Why are we done working?
And, that's, you know, my horse.
She's like, does this have a purpose? Not that she's not attached to me and enjoys being with me, but... like the little donkey will insert herself under my arm and just stand there, like as close as she can get, just sweetly sharing the moment. No expectation.
It's not always easy to be sensitive to those differences either.
Yes.
We have our own desires as far as what kind of level of contact we want.
Yes.
And if your animal is not in that same place with you, it can be a little hurtful, you know?
Oh, yeah.
If you can't, and or frustrating, or make you feel like, why does this animal not love me
exactly
the way I want them to love me, you know?
You take it personally.
You take it personally, of course.
And so true.
The dog's like, it's not personal. It's just how I use space, and it's how I deal. So the other complicating factor that you mentioned there is that what happens to puppies before they are 6-7 weeks old is mm-hmm. the foundation for their whole life. So if you consider that a 9-week-old puppy is neurologically about the same level of development as a 4 or 5-year-old child.
Wow, yeah.
So that is where all of the secure attachment happens. So imagine a kid that you adopted and he's 4 or 5 years old. No one had actually read to him or taught him colors or taken him any place. He just lived in the basement and he had a toy. And
yeah.
That's it. It's like, well, you're going to have some serious deficits. And you may also have a kid who doesn't understand the value of secure attachment. So they tend to withdraw.
Yeah.
Or they have erratic attachments. And this is well documented in so many social species that it will affect them for life, which is why we would like all children to have at least the first 5 years be with really supportive, loving, what they call serve and return interactions, where the mm-hmm. the baby or the child sends out a signal and somebody responds to it. And I think yes. the same is true for dogs, so that when you've seen how I raise my puppies, if a puppy's like, you know, it's like, okay, me or their mom or their great grandma or their grandmother is like, what's going on? Do you need some help? It's not that we're umbrella parents, but that we're responsive when they need response. If they say, yeah. hey, would you like to play with me? It's like, I would, the same way when my son was little. It's like, want to play Candyland? I'm like, not really. In my head, I'm thinking that. No, not for the 50th time. I do not like the molasses swamp. I do not like it. I was like, sure. Or I could say, hey, how about we play another game? I'll teach you a new game. Or let's go here and do that stuff. So when you take a dog who has not had an enriched and safe puppyhood, they are already missing things. If you think about their brains as kind of a box, you know, a freight train, and at mm-hmm. different ages, those boxcars are available and looking for things to be filled. But once you move to the next station, some of those boxcars close shut. Some of them yeah. start to be limited. Like, you can put stuff in later down the tracks, but it's much harder, and sometimes it's impossible. So it affects all their relationships, their relationships with other dogs, their relationships with people. And then on top of that, you have the individual temperament. So you've got genetics.
Absolutely.
What were they bred for? What was their early experiences like? And it's not always because they were abused. People are like, they must have been abused. Like,
yeah.
No, they're just as frightened as a child who grew up in grandma's cellar, you know, in Iowa, and then you took them to San Francisco during Pride Week. They're just going to be a little overwhelmed.
Yeah. Here's where I like to make a reference to Logan's Run usually, and then people look at me like, what are you, an 80s kid? And I'm like, yep. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, it's interesting. I have noticed that with Ozzy, there is a point, like, I won't get further, right? Like, I can push it to a point. We've gotten now to the point where when he sees something scary, we look at it together, and then he lets me know when he's ready to dismiss it, and he also lets me know when he's when he needs more distance and can't dismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to be right there and supervise that. He's not naturally going to tune into me. I have to be like, hey, buddy, do you need help right now? He's not going to be like, Iggy, hey, I actually need help right now, Mom, and I'm going to nudge you and let you know, right? It's just not like he's willing to get the help from me. But yeah. he's not going to seek it. And I think a lot of people adopt adorable puppies from rescues that have been, you know, maybe the dogs have been born in the rescue or in the shelter. And then when they turn 8 or 9 months old, these puppies have pretty severe behavioral issues, and then they blame themselves. But really, it's everything that happened before they got the puppy.
Yeah. So, you know, whoever handles that puppy before they're 8-9 weeks old makes or breaks them. And we still have the genetic component. So if we have a dog who's genetically shy, if we have a dog who says, look, I would rather that you don't touch me, or I'm sensitive to noises, that can happen, you know, in the best of homes. But that concept of, you know, it's like if you want to go out dancing every weekend, then you really should find a partner who wants to do that. You know, like people know this from hard experience, usually, that, well, I thought, you know, once he got to know me better, he'd be more, you know, affectionate or more of a hugger. It's like, no, if you want a hugger, then marry a hugger. That's my rule of thumb. And so if you want a dog, and that's my temperament assessment tool, helps people understand, what is it you're looking for? You know, like when you guys are in a house, it's like, well, it's got to have this, this, and this. We could live without that as long as it has this. You can compromise, but you have the non-negotiables. So I always ask people, like, what do you want this dog to do? It's nighttime, and you're curling up on the couch to watch a movie or read a book. Where's that dog? And they're like, oh, curled up right next to me with his head in my lap. I love that. It's like, then you have to pick a dog who wants to do that. Otherwise, you're going to be very upset when he's laying across the room saying, I can see you from here. Stop with all the hugging. So if you want a cuddler, get a cuddler. You want a dog who wants to play ball, get one who finds that like a delight from the get-go.
I remember spending several months trying to get Iggy into tugs. Anything that's not a stick, we don't care about. And then use all these tools where you build drive, quote unquote, and it just did not work. And I'm like, I think this dog just isn't into tugging.
Weirdly, many of the lynx children are not into tugging. I could not tell you why, because they're
trainers tell me I'm doing it wrong, and I'm like, I think it's just not her jam.
No, because there's something oppositional about tugging too, but it just gets so tiresome. It's like when an animal says, I don't really like doing this. And we're like, oh, well, we'll teach you to like it. It's like, I don't know. I don't know about that. I find that distasteful. Oh, once you get good at it, you'll love it. I'm like, no, there's a lot of things on my list. Like, short of delivering a pony every time I did it. No. It would have to be extreme, like, we'll pay off your mortgage. I'm like, all right, but how long do I have to wear the pantyhose for? Because that's really good. I'm
drawing the line. Put down that violin, Poindexter. We're going to hockey practice.
I am drawing a line right there. It's like, pick the dog that does the thing you like to do, because why are we fighting this uphill battle of asking someone? It's like, I had a friend, she loved to go to garage sales and flea markets, and I was like, oh, maybe once or twice a year, you know, for fun, for goof. But she's like, okay, this week there's this and that. I'm like, no, like, just no. I would rather, bake muffins or read a book or, I don't know, watch a caterpillar grow. It just held no appeal to me. And she's like, but you'll really love it. It's like, no, you know, maybe you'll find something special. I'm like, no, there's no payoff. So I always feel for animals when someone's like, I'm going to make you want this. Like, as soon as that sentence comes out of someone's mouth, I'm like, listen to yourself. Why are you pushing against it? So there's a difference too. If the animal is one of the animals that does not like to be wrong and finds learning stressful. So there are dogs who think, I don't know how to do this, and I'm not good at it, and what if I'm wrong? And they get upset. But once they learn it, they're like, I'm so awesome at this. You want to see how
good I am? For sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if I think it's that kind of dog, then I will carefully, slowly teach them how to be competent in it. And once they actually understand it, then I'll ask, is there any joy in it now? And it's like, oh, yeah, I love this thing. But if the answer is, I do know how to do it, it's like me wearing pantyhose. I know how to put pantyhose on. There is zero joy in Mudville. It's like, okay, it's stuff you learn, but it does not make you joyful. So let's not do that anymore.
I love that. I think that's a great closing comment before we go to our quick tip.
This one, you can start right this minute if your dog's even anywhere near you and awake. All three of mine are sleeping at my feet here. Make eye contact and smile at them. and every time they make eye contact, smile at them, and appreciate the gift that eye contact is. Not because you pointed to your eyes. The dogs, they know where your eyes are located, exactly where they last looked at, for them. So I don't spend a lot of time pointing to my face or telling them to watch me. But I always, to the best of my ability, if they glance my way, I glance back. Because nobody on the planet is going to be as happy to see you if you walk out of the out of the room, go to the bathroom, come back. The dogs will look up and be like, "Oh, you're back." No human is ever going to be as delighted to see you every time you enter a room. So enjoy that one. The eye contact is a connection. It's not accidental. And so teaching dogs that you are available and that they can engage you by looking at you, which means you have to be receptive to it. Now, don't get into stare at your dog for the next 10 hours, hoping somebody can break the tractor force field. It's like, no, you're not a spaceship stuck in a tractor beam. But man, eye contact is such a beginning of a conversation, the same way it is for people. So I teach it as a very deliberate skill. But way before I get formal about it, I'm available, and we're available to those puppies from the get-go. As soon as they can even see 2 inches past their nose, we are there for them, and it pays off. They believe eye contact with people is meaningful.
And I do find that Iggy finds eye contact comforting when she is upset or sad. She sometimes has big feelings like any young dog or young being would, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's the best when they're in their late teens. She'll like come and she'll lay her head on my or Jesse's chest and she will look, gaze into our eyes, and then we have to like pet her ears, mm-hmm. and tell her she's a very good dog, and ask her what she needs and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's very comforting to her as a connection.
Yeah.
She requires it sometimes.
They believe that it has value. So it makes me sad when, a lot of dogs do find eye contact threatening. And it's just, mm-hmm. it makes me really sad that, and it's one of the things to teach a dog is that eye contact is not scary. That, that means I have to be aware how I do it. Any human knows that someone can look at you and make you just run screaming for the hills like,
sure,
we're in trouble. Or they can make you feel really happy. And it could just be the cashier at the grocery store who really genuinely looks at you. And that's a place I would also say practice. Practice with mm-hmm. your fellow humans who are also animals. Like, really look them in the eye on purpose and smile at them. It's something that, we're losing that capacity. But definitely. Mm-hmm. Eye contact, because animals make it, and I love doing it, like with my parrots. They're very funny because their pupils go in and out like the Amazon's, like the Amazon and the macaw bowl. Woo, doo, doo, doo. It would be so entertaining if people's eyes went like that, so you could see if they were getting really revved up, and maybe not in a good way, because their pupils were changing shape rapidly. But it might get too freaky on an airplane if you looked over and be like, oh, God, I'm on a tin tube with a human macaw. It'd be very scary. You're welcome for that image. I can hear Jesse.
Wow, laughing. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's...
I'm enjoying it a lot. We've gone on a lot of journeys today, folks.
Oh, yeah. We have.
So, yeah, that's it for the interview portion. Wasn't Suzanne great, you guys?
Yeah, I really feel like I should have even been nicer to my friend with a fear of heights now. But okay, anyway, that was a great interview.
And dropping wisdom everywhere.
And even though Jesse was kind of critical with himself there for, having to redo this interview because we had technical issues, I have to say that I'm so grateful that you are so dedicated to recording quality and that we're having such a nice sounding podcast overall, which is not the norm, not always anyway. And
that is very sweet of you to say, yeah. Especially under the circumstances.
Well, and look it up, you guys. Jesse has his own recording studio at Maximum Wave Studios, and I believe the website features several pictures of possums.
There's at least one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
hissy.
I think you'll be really impressed when you see the website, everyone.
I'll link it for you.
Speaking of links, do you have anybody you want to shout out this episode?
I sure do. This kind of goes with the whole topic of relationship. So Grisha Stewart is a dog trainer who really focuses on empathetic and relationship building type training. And Grisha Stewart on our website has an excellent blog with all kinds of great topics. But the blog that I want to point you at today is the Safe Framework blog. SAFE stands for Secure Attachment Family Education. And in this blog, she talks about how if the dog feels safe around you and has a securely attached relationship to you,
mm-hmm.
right? As opposed to that anxious attachment style.
Yep.
We kind of touched about that on that in our interview, actually. Then that becomes kind of all the groundwork for living with your dog and training your dog.
Yeah, just like people and kids and stuff.
Just like people and kids. So it's a really, really great blog. It's super valuable. And Grisha Stewart, in general, is an excellent trainer and worth checking out.
Yeah, that's a cool way to think about it. Great. Awesome shout out.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Do we want to go to the outro? I think we're ready for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't you say things about your website and stuff?
Sure. Why not? So thanks so much for listening to the Reward Your Dog podcast. If you like the show, we would love it if you could reward us by reviewing, liking, sharing, and subscribing our episodes. In this episode, we were joined by the wonderful Suzanne Clothier. You can learn more about Suzanne at www.suzanneclothier.com. That is spelled SuzanneClothier.com. Suzanne is also on Facebook and Instagram at Suzanne Clothier RCT for Relationship Center Training. As always, we welcome feedback, suggestions, and questions, and please send these to Verena, V-E-R-E-N-A, at rewardyourdogtraining.com, or you can go to our website, www.rewardyourdogtraining.com/podcast. Right, Jess, you want to still do that mailbag segment?
You know, at a certain point, we're going to start sounding desperate, so yeah, I want to do a mailbag segment. Why don't you guys just take pity on us and send us a question?
We are desperate.
It is getting very sad.
Well, you can find Reward Your Dog Training on Facebook and TikTok as at Reward Your Dog Training and on Instagram as at Reward Your Dog. Do you want to tell us about the website one more time, Jess?
www.rewardyourdogtraining.com. I remembered that off the top of my head. I don't even have it written down in front of me.
You're so smart.
Yep.
Well, give your dog a cookie from us.
And give yourself a cookie, too.
And thank you so much to Suzanne.
Yep. Give Suzanne a cookie.
Sure.
Yeah.
You can mail it right to St. Johnsville.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe something that's packaged up a little better. She'd probably prefer some beef.
Sure. We talked about that, right?
Yeah. I think this isn't going well.
Oh, man.
We just cut that off right. A cookie. All right.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
We're talking about dogs. Talking about you and your dog. Struggling dogs. Talking about every kind of dog. Good dogs, bad dogs, especially the